So students, after understanding chapter 9, now we will be going ahead to chapter 10. You have understood just in chapter 9 how market structure can influence revenue of one firm, revenue of one firm, and how it can affect even the revenue of another firm. Now the complication of revenue is that whenever there is a change in price made by one firm, affecting that firm's revenue, simultaneously it also affects the revenue of another firm. So therefore, we have to come to two criterias. One, related revenues. Related revenues occurs in two markets and both are imperfect markets, oligopoly and monopolistic competition. So I want to tell you students that in the oligopoly and monopolistic competition, the revenues are related, which means one firm's pricing strategy definitely affects the revenue of another firm. And the revenues are not at all related, or we call it as unrelated revenues, occur in two markets, the perfect competition and the imperfect competition. So, in the imperfect competition, we pick up monopoly. So, students, the chapter 10 that we are going to discuss today is about revenue structure, objectives of firm, and break-even analysis. Here, we are purely going to focus on the unrelated revenues occurring in perfect competition and monopoly. So let's begin chapter 10 with understanding of what revenue means and what are the different types of revenue. Revenue, we say it is the income received by way of sale proceeds of any individual firm. So the sales proceeds of any individual firm is the revenue earned by the firm. So there are two words, income receipts or sales proceeds. Each unit of output sold in the market fetches a price, since the product that is being sold in the market has a MRP. And when we multiply the price with the revenue, with the quantity, we determine total revenue. That takes us to the formula of TR, total revenue, which is simply multiplying price per product with the total units of a commodity sold. So I say total revenue is equal to price multiplied by quantity. Assume that per product price is 10 rupees. Price per product is 10 rupees. And 100 units of the product are sold. So 10 multiply by 100. What do you attain? 1000. So 1000 is the total revenue earned on the sale of 100 units at the price of rupees 10 each. After understanding total revenue, we can also calculate from a given total revenue, the average revenue. Average revenue is price multiplied by quantity, that is your total revenue, divided by quantity. It means that if there is 1000 rupees earned as total revenue, I divide 1000 by 100 units because the company earned 1000 rupees on the sale of 100 units of output. So 1000 divided by 100. What answer do I get? 10. Exactly. 10 is the average revenue. But hello, 10 rupees is the price per product. Does it mean that average revenue is same as price? Correct. As you see here, it's written AR is equal to price. So students, average revenue is nothing but price of the product. We come to one more concept of revenue, which is marginal revenue. marginal revenue throws light on how much the total revenue is increasing when the company starts selling more and more units of output. In other words, when the company is selling more and more units of output, by how much its total revenue changes? The answer lies in MR, marginal revenue. How do we define marginal revenue? It is the additional revenue earned from selling additional unit of output. So when a company has sold 100 units of output, it earned 1000 total revenue. By how much the total revenue will increase when the company sells 50 more products? Just think, the company has already sold 100 units of output and earned a total revenue of 1000 rupees. What if the company sells 50 more units? By how much its total revenue will increase? Per product is 10 rupees. So 50 more products. So 10 multiply by 50 gives 500. So 500 becomes a increase in revenue. Correct? So we say that marginal revenue is additional unit, that is 101, 102nd, 103rd, 104th till 150th. So each unit of output will increase the revenue by how much? So marginal revenue, there are two ways of calculating marginal revenue. One, TRN minus TRN minus 1. Total revenue earned by selling 101 products. So you can remember to write total revenue earned from selling 101 products, that is 1010, correct? Minus total revenue earned from selling n minus 1, total revenue generated from selling 100 units. So total revenue earned from selling 101 products is 1010, and total revenue earned from selling 100 units is 1000. So 1010 minus 1000 is equal to 10 rupees. This is only because we are assuming it as a constant price. Second formula says MR is equal to delta total revenue divided by delta Q. This means that when a company has sold 100 units, it earned a total revenue of 1000 rupees. When it sells 500 more units or 50 more units, see now the difference is not 1. From 100 units, the company is directly selling 50 more. So how much is the total units? 150. So your delta Q will be 150 minus 100. 50. 50 will be delta Q. And what about the total revenue? It will be 500. 500. Because earlier it earned 1000 rupees and now it is earning 1500. So the difference in total revenue is 500. So 500 divided by 50. You get the answer as 10. So MR again becomes 10 over here. So students, I want to tell you that you will use the first formula, that is MR of nth product is equal to TRN minus TRN minus 1 only when the output is increasing by single units, 1, 2, 3, 4. But when the output is increasing in bulk, 100, 50, 110, 200, that time we have to make use of the second formula. So there are three types of revenue, or revenue gets divided into three categories: TR, AR and MR. Now we have to connect the relation between these revenues and market structures. If you remember, when I began the previous chapter, I was telling you that the revenue is purely affected by the market structure. We are here going to build up the relation between the structure of the firm, the market structure, and the behavior of revenue. And we begin first with perfect competition. To revise back, what is perfect competition? It is a market which consists of large number of buyers and sellers selling homogeneous product. And as you see over here, in this case, each firm is a price taker and not a price maker. Price multiplied by quantity gives me total revenue. Average revenue is same as price. But in perfect competition, each individual firm is only a price taker. So what happens over here? Here you will see that in this case, the company's average revenue graph, that is price multiplied by output, the price and output relationship, and also the demand curve will have the same slope. Let us look at the slope. It is this way. Same slope here, I mean that the average revenue and the marginal revenue will be same. That means at a given price, the seller can decide how much to sell. The total revenue faced by a perfect competitor will be a linear upward sloping graph. So the upward sloping positive sloped graph is the TR, total revenue. But this horizontal line, which is constant at 200 or a little above 200, is called as the fixed price. Now why is the price fixed? The previous chapter, market demand, market supply, they determine a fixed price. So the seller in perfect competition will always be facing a horizontal sloped revenue graph, which means you are a price taker. And this is how the revenue graph faced by your company would be. You cannot make any change with price. You can only decide the output at a given price. So please remember, students, in perfect competition, the AR and the MR will be always equal and it will be shown by a horizontal line, whereas the total revenue line will be a upward sloping graph. Here we find that this was a case only for individual firm, single seller. But what about when we talk about all the sellers? That is the industry demand. Here you find the industry demand curve is downward sloping from left to right, indicating that if a company wants to sell more, then they have to lower the price altogether. That means when all the sellers in perfect competition find that at a given price, they are not finding enough of buyers, then all of them together will have to bring down the price, which means all of them together will decide to supply at a lower price, because supply is more, demand is less. So prices will come down. So only in case of a whole industry, the demand graph will be downward sloping. But when you take individual firm, one firm, because it has a very small fraction, a very small share in the total market demand, each individual firm will be always facing a horizontal demand graph. In other words, at a given price, it has to look at the market demand and decide its output. This is what I have just discussed, the market demand, the market supply, the intersection point will determine the price, and that price will be taken as market price, which will be shown by a horizontal line. Fine. After understanding the relation, that is the nature of revenue under perfect competition, we pick up another market structure where again the revenue is unrelated. Why is it unrelated? Because a monopoly is a single seller having full control over price, and being a price maker, we have to understand how does it determine the price and balance the market demand. So, the revenue structure of a firm under monopoly has to be understood like this. First, monopoly is a market category in which single seller dominates the market. There are no substitutes of its products. So, competition totally gets avoided, because nobody will make a similar product. Nobody is allowed to make a similar product. So, the firm automatically becomes a price maker. It's the only firm, it's the only industry. There is no difference between firm and industry under monopoly. But unlike in perfect competition, as you saw, a single seller, that is an individual firm, faces a horizontal revenue graph. But when you take all the sellers, that is the whole industry, the demand graph goes down. I want to make it very clear, students, the demand graph is your revenue graph, average revenue. Because at a given price, how many people are ready to buy, how many people are willing to buy, determines the demand. Here you will find that even if the firm is a price maker, it cannot keep on increasing the price. As you see here, if a monopoly wants to sell more and more, he needs to drop the prices, surprisingly. But it's true. It's true because most of the examples that we had seen in books of monopoly were state monopolies, government controlled companies. And whenever state has a monopoly, its objective becomes welfare rather than profit. And that is the reason monopolists will always tend to exploit the consumers for profit maximization. And that was the reason why we had the MRTP Act, so that no companies become monopolist or tend to become monopolist and increase the price which the customers cannot afford. Second, cartel formation, groups coming together and becoming monopolist is also illegal. So there are many day-to-day examples where government or state plays a very strong role in controlling the monopoly power. And where state is a monopoly, it goes by the principle that in order to sell more, it has to lower the price. Okay, suppose if we decide that the monopolist does not want to lower the price, it wants to keep the price very high. What will be the effect? To understand that, we have to look at the revenue graph, average revenue graph faced by a monopolist. You will see here that the average revenue graph faced by a monopolist is downward sloping. You know what does this mean? It means that even if you are a single seller and you are not ready to bring down the price, so let's say you take the highest point on the AR graph. When you take the highest point on the AR graph, you draw a horizontal line and you take a vertical line down. When you take a vertical line down, you will find a very small size of market, which means at a very high price, you can capture only a fraction of the market. But what if you want to capture a major market share? What if you want to dominate over large number of consumers? Then the AR graph tells us a monopolist has to lower the price. This is on the assumption of law of demand. Below this AR graph, you can see a thin line of the MR graph. The marginal revenue has to be below average revenue. That is one of the principles. We can never have MR above AR. So, marginal revenue always lie below average revenue. Why? The answer to that why lies in your definition of average revenue and marginal revenue. Marginal revenue is additional revenue earned on selling additional unit of output. Correct? And we say that if a monopolist wants to sell more, then he must lower the price. That means every additional unit or a set of units that a monopolist will sell will be at a lower price. So the revenue, additional revenue earned from the sale of additional unit has to be less than average revenue earned. This is happening in case of airline tickets which are booked. If you are booking it a duration of time, you will find that the tickets are cheaper and later on it starts becoming expensive. So the marginal revenue earned, now this marginal revenue, that means this discount will be only on few tickets. There will be a specific quota or limit how many tickets should be given at a lower price, and then they pick up the rates. So there you can use the concept of AR, average revenue earned per ticket, per flight, per destination, and additional revenue on discount offers. This is usually done in order to capture as many customers as possible. So students, you will find that the average revenue curve under monopoly slopes downwards from left to right, as I said. And the marginal revenue curve always will be below the average revenue curve, such that making the MR steeper than average revenue. You have to remember, whenever you are looking closely at the diagram of revenue graphs applied to monopoly, certain conditions. One, average revenue curve will never cut the x-axis, which means a monopolist will never sell the product at a zero price. But marginal revenue can. Why we say marginal revenue can? Because there may be a chance that a monopolist can sell some products free. Free in the sense, he will cover up the price of the product, cover up the profit on the product in average. Average revenue price will be kept very high. When the price is kept very high, there are some number of products which are sold. And a monopolist has earned a high profit margin on the sale of those products. But now, it wants to sell the last leftover stock. And there is a time, how much time a monopolist needs to have patience for the product to be sold and to the price to be recovered. After that limit, the monopolist can afford to sell some products at a discount, a very huge discount, or at a very free, giving it totally free to the customer. This is possible when a monopolist is making diversified products and the products are called as joint products. So there is some cost on making the toothbrushes. But after selling a number of toothbrushes, the remaining number of toothbrushes can be used as a promotional strategy. They will be sold free along with the brand of toothpaste. So the marginal revenue earned on those few toothbrushes is zero because they are given free. That is the time when you will find the marginal revenue curve will cut the x-axis. That is at zero price. These few units, it can sell few units free just because it has already earned a high revenue on average sale. So this is some concept about the geometrical drawing of AR and MR, and an answer to why is it that AR curve cannot cut x-axis but marginal revenue can. You can understand it in a, as a give reason. This is further geometrically explained. The AR graph is downward sloping and the MR graph is very steep. But there has to be a very important point to be kept in mind when you are drawing these diagrams. One, that when you are drawing the MR graph, it should lie exactly half, midway between the x-axis and the average revenue. That is just because of the steepness of the slope. There is purely a geometrical reason. So, such that the distance from y-axis to marginal revenue and from marginal revenue to average revenue should be same. As you can see here, it's given PR is equal to PS. S should be on AR and R should be on MR. Okay? After understanding the revenue behavior of a monopoly and a perfect competition, where one firm's decision will not affect the other firm in perfect competition because each firm is selling a very small fraction. And secondly, monopoly, it's the only seller. So whatever decision it makes is going to affect its own revenue only. There is no competition. So this was a case of two market structures having unrelated revenue. Decision made by one will not affect any other firm. Now we go ahead to the next part of this chapter, which is objectives of firm. Here we would like to make you understand that most of the firms prefer to keep profit maximization as their prime objective. Now here you have to remember that even though the objective of the firm is to maximize profits, there are many other objectives which come, like satisfactory return, psychic income, gaining reputation as a good businessman, serving quality product, maximizing sales, long-run survival, avoidance of loss, and many other objectives. So profit maximization is the objective, but it is not the only objective. And keeping in this mind, we want to throw light on what are the other objectives which the firms try to pursue. We would begin with first profit maximization. The price output policy should be such that the firm must be in a position to earn maximum profit. Yes, a monopolist does that. Or any seller will try to adjust the price if it's possible and the output such that they get maximum profit. Now, what's the formula of profit? Total revenue minus total cost. However, in reality, there are very few firms who aim at maximum profit. And the reasons for that is that why companies are not running only after maximum profit is, if firms maximize profits, rival producers are attracted. As you see in competition, free entry and exit. If one company makes maximum profit, it will definitely attract more sellers, thereby bringing the market price down. So that may be also the reason why companies don't want to show they are making maximum profit or they are earning maximum profit. public or government may get antagonized. It means that when one seller makes maximum profit, it comes under the eyes of government, taxation. So to avoid government interference, also sometimes companies don't aim at maximum profit. It can harm goodwill of the company. When you say it can harm the goodwill of the company, what does it mean? It means that many a times customer feels that they are being exploited. Company is making profit only by exploiting them. And there are other qualities of life are lost, because after profit, lot of sacrifices like opportunity cost by the managers and the whole team who is involved with profit will definitely increase. Therefore, there are many other objectives which are becoming more important after profit. So we will be going to that one by one. The second you can see here is sales maximization. Here we try to say that companies aim to maximize sales revenue. Sales revenue, here we are talking about price multiplied by quantity, sales proceeds. Yes, in sales maximization, we are talking about maximization of total revenue. If the company manages to bring down its cost and maximize its total revenue, it automatically gets profit. So here, sales does not mean maximum volume of output, but it means maximum total revenue. Let's see what further it has to talk about. Sales maximization under a profit constraint. It means that company will fix how much profit they want and then only work hard on increasing the output. At a given price, sell more and more. The more the company sells, the more it earns the revenue. It prefers to maximization of total revenue, as I said, and it is one of the best way to understand how much the company is successful in selling its product in the market. The third is quiet life and stable profits. Stable profits, not maximum profits. Companies want to earn what is called as stable profits. And when you talk about stable profits, you come to the conclusion that companies here objective is to see that the managers who are working there, their positions are secured. And even if the profit is stable, the profits will never come down. They will remain stagnant. So, trying to perform in such a way that for n number of years, the company's profit may not increase, but at the same time, their profits may not decrease also. So then we say that the company is aiming at quiet life and stable profits. And of course, when a company is not making too much of profits, they are left at peace. That is one of the best thing. Okay. The next is long run survival and growth. In order to continue enjoying a reputation, quality work has to be given. We have companies like Britannia, well known for their quality products. We have company, even when you talk about movies like Yash Raj movies and all, they are still from many years, they are providing entertainment to the, to the masses. So there are companies who are even now well known for retaining their goodwill to the customers. And here companies believe that if they are able to give the best to their customers, that means they are going to have a long run future market. Here you remember that in this objective, the economists are mentioning that after overcoming the teething trouble of mere survival, firms derive growth. So firms believe that if they are able to survive for long, it is very easy for them to keep on growing and keep on expanding their firm. So companies always aim at providing the best, the goodwill to the customers. And here you will find that most of the companies are definitely providing the best to the customers. The next is growth maximization. When you talk about growth maximization, if the company grows, the employees also grow with that. But how can we measure the growth of the company? The criteria which is kept over here is value of the firm's shares in stock markets. Here we are trying to associate the company's growth with the share value of the company. The company's shares, what value they give in the market, we accordingly directly correlate it with the company's growth. So definitely stock market and the value at which the shares are being purchased plays a very important role for the company's future growth. Apart from those all broad objectives, we have small objectives which can be together kept as one-time objectives by n number of companies. And the very first objective is balance sheet homeostasis. Here, the firm is purely looking at its balance sheets, the assets, the liabilities, tallying the credit and the debit. In fact, year ending, you always know the year ending, the auditing. Once the auditing begins, the companies have to keep on updating its financial documents. So this plays a very important role. The behavioral theory is one of the theory where we talk about companies always maintaining their short-term goals with production, inventory stock, short-term sales, day-to-day salesmen, they give them the targets, and according to that, they also try to keep on determining their market share. So, behavioral theory basically means day-to-day data, day-to-day record, and how the company behaves in the long run. Utility index theory. This is one of the objectives which companies have started bringing in now. And in utility, they are purely interested in the services that the employees are drawing from the company. No doubt, the company requires the employees. It requires a team of best managers and best employees. But at the same time, it's also important that the employees and the team who is working for the company is also able to derive utility from by working in that firm. So here the aim is on purely satisfaction. Satisfaction of the customers, satisfaction of the employees, satisfaction of the bosses and staff. So utility index is purely focusing on the satisfaction which the staff and the customers may aim at. We come to a conclusion of the objectives of the firm, which says that neither of these approaches have yet produced an alternative which has sustained enough recognition to replace the traditional theory of firm. All these objectives are overlapping. No one objective is purely applicable to one firm at a time. You will find n number of these objectives overlapping each other and becoming the day-to-day, short-run and long-run objectives of firms. Out of all these objectives, we will go back and pick up the first objective, maximization of profits. Because if you carefully understand all these objectives, you will come to the conclusion that yes, if somehow these other objectives are fulfilled, the firm will automatically be able to reach profit goal. To understand that, we are going to make use of a tool, a mathematical tool that is very much used in understanding the objectives of firm and especially profit calculation. And that is break-even analysis. Break-even analysis, popularly called as sales cost volume relationship. We try to here look at that level of output or sales where the company's revenue equate its cost. In other words, in break-even analysis, the most important part is to find the break-even point. Break-even point is that point where the level of output is so reached that total revenue becomes equal to total cost and hence net income is zero. We know that the firm aims at maximum profit. But before it reaches maximum profit, it has to determine its break-even point. It has been found that without finding the break-even point, it is impossible to reach the profit maximization goal. So, break-even volume tells us the number of units of a product that must be produced or that must be sold in order to generate enough revenue to meet all expenses. So, break-even point is a guiding principle for the company over how much to sell, how much to produce, so that they do not incur a loss. Because it is a mathematical tool, it has a formula. And this is what the formula is about. It says, break-even point or break-even volume, as you call it, is calculated by a formula called total fixed cost divided by price. Now, this price is selling price. Selling price minus variable cost. This selling price minus variable cost is also called as marginal contribution per unit. So, students, you will see that the two main variables involved in calculating break-even point is the cost and the price. So, I will make you understand this formula by a sum on the board. So, as I was telling you that we'll have a working of the calculation of break-even point. The formula is written, break-even point is equal to total fixed cost divided by selling price minus average variable cost. It is the cost per unit of product. I have assumed as the fixed cost 75,000, selling price as 850 minus 100 as the variable cost. Let's say that it is a ship which can carry lakhs of passengers and its cost is 75,000 fixed cost. Per passenger ticket price is 850. Let's say if that boat is taking you from Gateway of India to Elephanta Caves. 75,000 is the fixed cost. 850, we assume it. I know it's a very high price. Nobody would prefer to board that boat. But that is one of the price. And 100 is the variable cost per passenger. We divide 75,000. 850 minus 100 gives us 750. When we divide it, we get the answer 100 units. That means at any given time, at least 100 passengers should be there for the boat to carry them. Otherwise, the cost will be more and the revenue will be less and the company or the ship or the boat, whatever example we are talking about, will not be in a position to function. So, break-even point is the point which guides a company how much minimum they must produce or they must sell in order to reach the no loss zone. To understand this is a break-even point, because break-even point is where total revenue and total cost are equal, we have done a calculation separately. Total revenue, as the formula says, price multiply by quantity. So, 850 is the selling price. We have to multiply quantity as our break-even answer, break-even point. So, your break-even point has been 100 units. This 100 units, you are going to write in place of quantity. So, 100 multiply by 850 gives us 85,000. So, total revenue that can be earned if 100 units are sold or 100 passengers board the ship, or the boat, it's 85,000. What about the cost? Now here, we have to consider the fixed cost and add total variable cost, because we are calculating total cost. And the total cost formula is total fixed cost plus total variable cost. So what is done over here? Fixed cost, that is 75,000, you plus with it the variable cost. Now the variable cost was assumed to be as, that is your average variable cost. So here the average variable cost is multiplied with the units of output. So 100 rupees multiply by 100 units. Since 100 units is our break-even volume, we get finally again the answer 85,000. So 85,000 is the total cost, 85,000 is the total revenue, and therefore the break-even is 100 units. So as we had just seen in a simple calculation, how break-even point can be determined, let us look at the diagram that most of the break-even graphs are like. As you see here, you will find that on the x-axis we measure output, and on the y-axis the revenue and cost. The total fixed cost, which was 75,000 in our example, is a horizontal fixed line. The total variable cost, average variable per product was 100. More the output, more the variable cost. You add both fixed and variable, you will get the total cost. In our example, you saw that the total cost and total revenue were equal at 85,000. That is your point B. So B point is the break even, and it shows us an output of 100 units. The left hand side of the break even indicates loss area, because your cost is higher and the revenue is less. The right hand side of the break even indicates the profit zone, because the revenue goes on increasing faster than the increase in total cost. So a break even diagram gets divided into the left and the right hand side of the break even point. The left hand side indicates the loss area, and the right hand side indicates the profit area. Once the company can determine its break even point, it can always keep on increasing output in order to maximize profits. Now we look at the theoretical aspect of break even analysis. We begin with assumptions. There are certain assumptions that are taken place for break-even analysis. First, cost and revenue can be reliably determined and remain linear over the range. You can see that when we looked at the graph was a straight line. So we assume that the cost and revenue are linear, they will increase in the same proportion. Cost can be classified only into fixed or variable. That is why you have total fixed and total variable. You add both, you get the total cost. Fixed cost remains constant over the range. Therefore, the fixed cost was a horizontal line. Variable cost varies proportionately with volume. So, the variable cost graph was upward sloping, a 45 degree line. Selling prices do not differ. We took the selling price as 100. We did not bother that the selling price will come down or go up. We avoid that. Prices of factors remain unaltered, so there is not going to be any change in the cost. Productivity and efficiency remains unchanged, because they are qualitative factors and break-even is a mathematical concept. So we ignore the quality and efficiency of workers who are of part of the production process. Volume is the only factor affecting cost. So when the company makes more output, its cost will get affected. Volume of sales and production are equal. Uniform rupee value at production and sales point. We do not look into consideration of exchange rate of rupee with any other currency. Because it has assumption, it's bound to have limitations. First, linear relationships of cost do not hold good for all levels of output. It's practically impossible to think that the cost will increase by the same proportion for the entire volume of output. With increase in sales, firm uses plant beyond capacity. It happens. Sometimes once the company reaches the break-even, it may tend to increase its plant, leading to still higher cost. Addition of capacity or overtime increases cost sharply. That's what I said. Product undergoes changes in quality. We do not mention at all about adjectives. As I said, qualitative factors are ignored. Depreciation estimates are quite arbitrary. We do not consider depreciation of any asset. Once the fixed cost is taken, we do not at all consider what role depreciation of an asset will have over the fixed cost. Matching time of output and cost is a serious limitation, because if there is a delay in the beginning of the project, it may definitely change the break-even point. It may lead to higher cost. So we ignore any type of delay projects when we are discussing of break-even point. Selling price does not remain constant over the range of output, as you saw in monopoly. In order to sell more, the company may reduce the price. So how will it affect the break-even now? These things are ignored in break-even mathematical concept. Further, changes in the pattern of demand, product mix, concessions impair the accuracy of analysis. As I said, again, we ignore what will happen when the customers, their demand pattern undergoes a change and company tries to reduce the price in order to sell more. Analysis is static in nature, because you purely take some numbers as given, fixed cost is given, variable is given, and just apply it in the formula. So it is very static in nature. It assumes profit is the function of the only output. And lastly, we believe that once break-even point is reached, the company, nothing can stop the company from reaching the profit zone. Does not consider elements of uncertainty due to changes in tax. So break-even might have been decided, company's output have been more, but still company faces a loss because of a sudden increase in taxes. So sudden changes are ignored. So it is more a static model. Still it is being used by managers, and the main reason is it is a very useful tool of managerial planning and decision making. Because at least some estimate of how much to sell, how much to produce can be pre-calculated. It is a simple and inexpensive device. You saw that by just using the formula on the board, you could understand. So it's a very simple concept. It is useful as a frame of reference and vehicle for expressing the overall performance in situations when no other information is available. It's definitely useful. When the company has totally no idea of how much to sell, that is the time when break-even calculation will help the managers to at least estimate the output. It is very useful to management as it provides information for decision making. So students, with that, we have completed this chapter. You have understood the revenue structure faced by perfect competition and monopoly. You have also realized that even though profit maximization is the main goal, it is not the ultimate goal. There are many other alternative objectives, other broadly classified objectives, which will take the company towards its profit goal if they are met. And finally, a mathematical concept like break-even analysis, which is not 100% foolproof method, but definitely a useful tool for decision making. Thank you.